Welcome to the Women on the Rise podcast. I'm Jen Blandos, the founder of Female Fusion, and this is where we look at everything entrepreneurship for female entrepreneurs. Whether you are just getting started or you have a 7 or 8 figure business, we cover the topics that matter most to you as you are building, growing, and scaling your business. In today's episode of the podcast, I'm sitting down with the one and only Tina Tower, who is not only well known here in Australia, but also worldwide. And Tina is the queen of digital business, especially for female entrepreneurs. And she is the one who helped me understand and navigate the world of digital business when I was building and scaling Female Fusion. Welcome to the podcast, Tina.
Thanks, Jen.
So nice to sit down with you face to face.
I know.
We always see
each other. Here we are, globetrotters.
Yes.
Mingling together.
Absolutely. Well, you've just come back from a beautiful holiday.
I did.
Living the dream.
I am. Last night. I mean, it's hard to say whether it even happened because I didn't even put a picture on social media at all.
But sometimes those are the nicest ones.
I know,
right?
I just literally disappeared.
Yeah.
It's fabulous.
Oh.
Yeah.
So before we jump in, for people who don't know you,
yeah.
I think a lot of people do, but maybe some of our
There's a lot of people who don't, yes.
Okay, so everybody international, because you were saying to me before we started recording that your recognition is more sort of in North America, Australia, and New Zealand. Yeah. So we have a big audience in Europe, Africa, Asia. Middle East.
Yeah.
So tell everybody.
Hello, new friends.
Who is Tina Tower?
Who am I? Isn't that the existential question?
Yes.
I am a business owner, really, in a nutshell. I have been playing the game of business since I was 20. I started my first business, fell head over heels in love with it, and have built and sold 4 different companies by now. And just love it. I love the game of it. I love what it can do for you. I've done all different types of businesses. I've started a lot. I've built and sold 4, but I've started and closed probably another 5.
Have you really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. When I sold my last big company, I started 4 just not knowing what I wanted to do. I did totally left of field things. I started a jewelry company. I did a clothing company. The craziest was I bought film rights for a book series and went to Hollywood and tried to make it into a movie. Yeah.
How did that work?
I mean, it was fun. But you know, you get yourself in some situations and you're like, what? How did I get here? What am I even doing? You've got to follow sparks of ideas sometimes. Yeah. You never know what's going to come of it. And you know, a lot of us, I'm sure you can relate to this too, like we define ourselves by our business. Sometimes we get in really deep. And then when I sold that company, it was my biggest one that I'd built. So my whole identity was wrapped up in that. And I had forgotten, like, what do I naturally like to do? What do I want to be when I grow up? Like, what is that next chapter? So I thought I'd just play for a bit.
But that happened to you at quite a young age as well.
Yeah, I was
right?
33 when I sold
that
business.
That was the tutoring business that you had?
Yes. Yes, okay. We had 40 tutoring centers around the country and started expanding internationally, and it got way too big and serious for me. And I just felt like I was the person to start it, not the person to grow it.
But that happens to a lot of entrepreneurs, right?
Completely.
Got the idea.
Yeah.
Set it up.
Yeah.
And then running it.
Ugh. So I have actually figured out I'm a founder, not a manager. I love going from like ideation to creation and the game of it. But when it starts to get like we know a boring business is a profitable business.
Yeah.
Doing your same systems again and again, keeping that level, experimenting with your marketing, but not breaking what you've built.
Yeah.
Is nearly impossible for entrepreneurs.
Because we try to break it.
We do.
It's a bit boring.
Yeah, we do. Or we think, you know, well, let's do this, or let's change direction to this, or let's do that, which we can, but it depends on the infrastructure of the business. So it's why I love online business, is you can have a lot more flexibility than with traditional bricks and mortar business. It's a lot harder to be so experimental and crazy like we are.
Yes. But did you find, because I found this a little bit tricky, that I had a bricks and mortar business, and this is how I found you as well, that I had bricks and mortar businesses for years.
Yeah.
Lived all over the world, done all these crazy things. And then the pandemic was what really got me into the digital business.
Yeah.
And I never would have thought that I would have gone into the digital
world. Yeah. I also thought I was maybe a bit too old.
Oh, yeah.
But did you find it a little bit scary at first to go from traditional bricks and mortar to digital?
No, I love what you can reach in digital. Yes. And how many people you can reach. Like right now, people are hearing us all over the world. They could be anywhere in the globe, in the most obscure places. And you get messages from people and you're like, you live where and you found me where, yeah, and we can do business together, which was not really possible before. The part that I found hardest or scariest was the personal exposure.
Yes.
That's the part that I have struggled with the most, because I get really excited about what I do and I love what I do, that people think I'm very extroverted because I get very excitable, but I'm massively introverted. I would like to hide behind my computer screen and just create stuff all day, every day by myself. Yeah.
But do you know that is true? Because before I met you in person,
yeah,
you come across like,
I know,
super extroverted.
I know. I always feel like I disappoint people when I meet them in person. I'm like, I'm sorry.
But it's interesting because being online, you can do this, right?
Well, it's short pockets.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do genuinely get very excited about what I teach and what I am doing, but that's not sustainable all the time. And I get really like talked out.
And you can close the laptop and go.
Yeah.
Oh,
I live on a farm. Like with my husband and two kids, we live on a farm. It's very, very quiet. Yeah. We've built big gates.
Keep everybody out.
I mean, they, like my kids' teeth, like sometimes I can go a whole week and not leave the house. I love it.
That's kind of the dream for some people, right?
Well, for some people, it's hell, but for me, it's perfect. And this is the thing, like with business, we get to create whatever it is that is perfect for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you went from that, created your digital business, and you first started with a membership, but you didn't have very many people. Like it wasn't that.
Yeah.
It was. Okay. So no, you started with courses first.
So I started in a bit of a backwards way. So I've always been extremely strategic and very planned in everything that I have done, except this. This was the first thing that I kind of tripped and fell into accidentally. In the most wonderful way. But I started, like I started many of the other businesses, in going, I wonder what I might like. Yeah. And I had read, I saw James Wedmore was the first person I saw. And then I went down that rabbit hole and found Jenna Kutcher and Amy Porterfield and started researching all of them. And quite frankly, I read a lot of it and was like, oh, bullshit, this is not possible.
Yeah.
And was like, I wonder if like, I'll give it a try and see how we go. So I thought I'd try an online course with what I knew, and because we were going to travel around the world and we would do that while I would travel. So I started three because I couldn't figure out which one I wanted to do. So I did the Tutoring Institute because I just built tutoring centers. Yeah. So I thought I can teach tutors. I did the Happy Life because I wanted to talk about wellness and mindfulness and happiness. And then I also did Scale Up. So that was all about systems and service-based business, scaling, selling.
Yeah.
I stuck with Scale Up. So I killed off the other two after 6 months, but I ran all three of them. We had people in all three businesses for 6 months while I was figuring out what I wanted to talk about. Okay. And Tutoring Institute would have been the most lucrative from the get-go, but I was sick of talking about it. Well, I'd just been doing it for 13 years and was like, no, I don't want that for my next chapter. I want something fresh. So I loved Scale Up. Started that as a membership. We had four people. And so I ran that with four people for 6 months, launched again, had six people. Then I didn't know whether I wanted to do a membership or courses. I'd read about courses and I thought that sounds better, less commitment to the ongoing. So I thought I'll do a course launch, see how that goes. And we launched the first course, which was Idea to Launch. So that was in 2018. And we got 11 people in it. So made $11,000. It was a $1,000 course. And I could not believe it. Like, to some people, $11,000 isn't very much money, but I was like, you did what? When? Like, I sent a few emails. I went live a couple times. I was like, this is insane. If I can do this, like, dabbling, what could it be like, seriously?
With the proper strategy.
And so then I got strategic and was like, I wonder how long it could take me to make $1 million. If I really tried for this and really did it properly, how long would it take? And it took me 19 months from that point. But I gave it a red hot go with that. And that's the thing. A lot of people would get, you know, four people for their first one and go, oh, it doesn't work.
Done.
Yeah. I wanted more. even with her Empire Builder. So her Empire Builder was due to launch in the January of 2020. We were going to America, to Palm Springs, and we were launching it all. And then all the whispers started coming in with COVID. Our retreat was booked for March, and I flew there, and everyone else was supposed to fly the day after, and the country got shut down.
So were you locked out of Australia?
No, I got to the consulate and got turned around and sent back. Ah. Yeah. So it was quite dramatic, but it was quite dramatic for a lot of people.
Everybody,
But I mean, we were really lucky in that I'd spent the previous 2 years building online courses, and then literally I have never worked so hard in my life with everyone going, help. I've like really super highly paid speakers and authors that...
They all lost their revenue streams.
But they had no email lists. They built no business behind the service that they were providing, which is what shocked me so much. Like, there were people that, you know, charge $15,000 per pop for a speaking engagement, and they're doing like one or two a week in front of thousands of people. And I'd be like, it's okay, we can package what you do for your speech and we can sell it to your audience. And they had like 100 people on their email list, which I don't think anyone will make that mistake again.
Correct. Yeah. It's all of that email.
Yeah. But that is how, I mean, that is really how her Empire Builder was born.
Yeah.
Was it came from that.
And so when you launched her Empire Builder, how many people did you have?
32.
Amazing.
It was so exciting. Yeah. Like, it was, so some people will ask me, you know, like when you go, like, is there, do you still get as excited as you did? And nothing has ever got me as excited as that very first launch, because it's the only time it's ever exceeded my expectations.
Yeah.
So I was hoping for like 10 to 15, and then it just kept going in the last, like the last 15 of them came in the last 2 hours. And so I'm there ringing my bell going, oh my God, this is amazing. And it was just fabulous. And that first group was like so good to have in an intimate setting, and they're still mostly members now. So we've become more friends than anything.
And it's during that period as well, it was such a difficult and emotional period.
Yeah.
So you sort of bond during that as
well. Yeah, actually, I've never thought about it like that. That is probably a large contributing factor to why that's such a close-knit group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was like, I look back on that, someone was saying, can you believe it's almost 4 years since the pandemic happened? Can you believe that?
No.
I know. It's like almost four years, because I started getting into the digital world in 2020.
Yeah.
4 years.
Wow.
Time goes by fast when you're having fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it lasted for 2 years, though. So. The never-ending story.
A little bit more, yeah. But it's crazy, because it's really, so many people say as well that they've gone the digital route, even if they have a bricks and mortar business, they're all like, I need other revenue streams.
Yeah. It's a beautiful compliment.
Totally.
Yeah.
Like, pretty much every business can have some sort of digital element to it.
Yeah, nearly.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I think is so cool about what we do.
Definitely.
But what I've thought is amazing with what you do in Empire Builder is seeing just how you have managed to scale as a business. Yeah. And, you know, how...
I mean, it's been up and down, though.
It is up and down.
Yeah.
And it is... it's hard.
Yeah. I get to certain places and go, will I, won't I? Do I want to? Do I not want to? Like, I'm not, you know... We were talking about this before. We're not naive like we were 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Like I used to hear that people would say, you know, they grew too big or they killed their business by growing too fast. And I'd be like, what? Yeah. How do you do that? Bigger is better. Like, fast is good.
Fast is good.
Yeah.
Right? And then you get burned out.
Yeah. So I'm very purposeful and manage it very carefully. Now I'll get to certain levels and get all the infrastructure right and everything right behind the scenes before I accelerate again, even though there's so many opportunities that I could press on and take and double our business, but at what cost?
Yeah.
And I'm no longer willing to pay the cost that I used to.
So did you do that at all with the digital business? Did you push too hard?
So I didn't push too hard. We got, so what is now Empress Circle, we started, that was our first iteration of her Empire Builder. So the way we did that was it was a lot more service heavy. So we had accountability calls. We had, like, I would start, which I know everybody makes the mistake in doing, if you need anything at all, you just let me know. Just give me a call. I am here for you all the time. Like, the premise of it was, like, I'm at your beck and call. You want anything, come
don't,
get me.
don't do that. And do you know what? Yeah. So many people, because you value stack it, like especially if you're having a membership, you're like, you feel like you have to throw all this value so people will sign up. But then the problem is, what does that look like if you have
100,
500, 1,000? I was talking to someone the other day. It's like, I want 100,000 in my membership. And I'm like, so what are you doing offering all of this stuff?
Yeah, you got to be really careful what you offer.
Because this is what you're stuck with. And I made that mistake.
I think we all do, because we want to lay the value. But I also think that that's one of the benefits of founding members too, is going, they deserve more because they're taking a punt on the unknown as well. So what I did, we got that to 100 people. Okay. And I was like, if we go any further beyond this, I know that that's too many for me to handle. Yeah. I knew everybody, exactly what their business was doing, how their marriage was, what the kids were doing, every launch they were doing, what their numbers were. I'm like, my brain is filled with these people's businesses. So I had to make the decision, do we sit? Like, is that it now? And we just keep it there. And just like I was saying earlier, the boring business, like just keep it flowing on, because it's a beautiful business model.
Yeah.
Or do I want to change something going forward? And I decided I wanted to impact more people and get them in at a lesser price point so that they could grow. Because there's so many women that want to grow their online courses, and they build these courses thinking, build it and they will come, and no one's coming. And the hardest part is the marketing, the back end, the team, the systems, all of that sort of thing that no one really figures out until you get there. And then you go, what am I missing?
But
what
nobody
do I do?
Tells you. No, nobody tells you either, right?
Like, because that's, it's hard. And that's not a sexy dream to sell.
Yeah.
In going, you know, it sounds beautiful going, work 10 hours a week and make $1 million a year.
After you've done it for 10 years.
Exactly. Yes. And to get there, you're going to have to do all these things. And most people will see all of that and go, I'm good. Thanks.
Yeah.
So many people say they don't join my programs because it's too hard.
Interesting.
And I'm like, it's right. And I'm happy for people to self-select out of that because it's where high achievers go. It's the place where people that want to actually get results can come, not where you want to pretend to be a business owner.
You don't want that.
Yeah. Right?
And I get that as well in Female Fusion. Like, I had someone say, I don't want my membership anymore because Jen is always talking about building profitable businesses and, you know, helping us grow our business. And I don't want to grow my business. And I find that's too much. And I was like, okay, so you don't want a profitable business. You want an expensive hobby.
But you know what? There's circles that will be perfect for her that are about celebrating friendship and connection and different things that are going to be great.
Yeah.
You've got to, I think that so much of the key to our success is knowing your lane, like who you're serving, why you're serving them, and sticking with that.
But people don't do that in the beginning. They just go, I'm going to set up a business.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to have a
course.
Throw a
bit of spaghetti at the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Set up five businesses at once.
Right. You don't know. You don't know. It's all about refinement. I mean, the thing is, like, you do get really good when your messaging gets really tight.
Yes.
And that I think comes through experience, because you get feedback from your audience and you're like, okay, I love working with this person. I don't love working with this person. How can I make sure that my messaging is tighter to get more like this, but not more like this? And so you get better at it as you go.
So what do you think was your secrets to getting to seven figures?
Three things. Probably, I'm actually doing it in our next challenge, is 3 M's: money, merit, and marketing. So money, like the back end of all the business.
Yeah.
We've got tight systems. I mean, I was from a franchising background, was my last one. So I think that that has translated so well into, even though it's a completely different business, the skill set of it in being able to go, this is how we can do a whole lot more with a whole lot less people, time, like what we can do in our business with the size of the team that we have and what I do with the hours I put in is, like, most people would look at it and go, no, you can't do all of that in that time. But my systems are a work of art.
Yeah.
They're beautiful. The systems and automation is probably what, like, I know most people don't get, but I'm like, love hard eyes for systems. So I think that's a big part, because you have to generate profit.
Yeah.
And I think too many people are not willing. Like, someone I was talking to this morning, and she's like, I'm launching my first 30-day program. I finally built it and put it out there. No one's bought it yet, and I don't know what's wrong. I'm like, all right, well, let's have a look at what you're doing. What is the marketing that's happening? She's like, I'm doing two posts a week. like, okay, well, we know that that's not going to work because the internet's a saturated place. So it's all these things in going, you don't know what you don't know.
Correct.
And so working that out, and I am a big experimenter and I have no problem with failure. I mean, I don't love it. I'd rather not fail, but I don't, you know, a lot of people take it very heavy and personally, whereas I can dust it off a little bit.
But it's kind of like, I see it as like an expensive training course, right?
It is. You know, you don't know sometimes until you do it.
Correct.
Whether you want it or not. Like, I will change my mind on different things or change direction, or, and people go like, are you scared of like people judging you and the failure of it? I'm like,
no.
No.
Yeah.
No. I'm not. So I think that the business side of things, having a really tight marketing plan, and unfortunately, 70% of our business is marketing, which is not fair and not right, but it is.
Yeah.
It's the game.
And you need to show up.
Yeah.
And it's, even if you're introverted and you don't
like people. Hey, there's a way for introverted people. I think online business is an introvert's playground because it's very, you know, very small bursts. So you can, if you're talking about something that you're really passionate about, you don't have to grandstand and do all of that sort of thing. You can do it in your own way that works, no matter what personality type it is. And that's the key with online business, is when you actually do be you, that's when you succeed, which I love. There's not many businesses that I think have that in it.
But it takes people a while to figure that out, right?
Yeah.
I see this even with a lot of our members, whether they're digital businesses, bricks and mortars, products, services, whatever, that they feel uncomfortable showing up and feel that they have to show up in a certain way.
Yeah.
And then when they realize that they don't, that they show up who they are, that's when the magic starts to happen.
But you've got to get comfortable. Yeah. And I think you can only get comfortable with practice.
How long did it take you to get comfortable?
Way too long.
Really?
Way too long. Yeah. Way too long. So speaking, well, I mean, I had practiced speaking a lot before I came into online business. And I used to throw up before them. And
did you?
Yeah, I was awful. I hated it. And it was before they had like the lapel mics and the headsets, and you had handheld mics. And so my hand would shake and like, so embarrassing. And you can't hide it.
Yeah.
And I went to two different speaking coaches, and they're like, the only thing you can do to get over it is reps. You've just got to prove to your brain you're not going to die. Yeah. And so I did. I did it like every week. For 12 weeks, I went and did a keynote speech.
And then eventually it works.
Eventually I stopped throwing up, and then eventually I stopped shaking so much. But still now I get nervous. Yeah.
But what about for the online? Because again, like, for example, I found I did so much public speaking before I even owned a public speaking company. But then showing up online when you don't know who's watching you.
Yeah.
And you know, I think the biggest thing, and I had people say to me, they're like, aren't you worried about people writing me things and judging you? And I kind of was like, whatever, I don't care. But some people really won't do it because they're so scared of that.
Yeah. I think I don't think about all the people.
Yeah.
I think about like a couple of people.
Okay.
So there's always, I know you know this, but I have my fake character, Alice Carrington, who is actually based on a real member, and she doesn't know. And I don't know if I'll ever tell her that, but she's it. And whenever I go to do things, I present to her, I say it to her, I go, what does she need to know, or what will be helpful, or what will add value? And I just talk to her, which is much, much easier than going, okay, thousands of people see me right now. What am I going to do? Like, that's just intimidating.
Yeah.
And then the opposite of every speaking coach, I would say, don't watch yourself back. So many people say, watch yourself back so you can figure out what you're doing wrong and fix it.
For the online stuff, I never do.
No, because you have to, the volume of which you have to show up is so high. To really get traction, you know, you're doing your webinars, you're going live on social media, you're showing up in your Facebook groups, you're presenting in real life person, like there's a lot of showing up. And I think if we get into the headspace too much of critiquing every single thing that we're doing and every tiny little nuance that we do that we don't like about ourselves, you would pick the shit out of it and then you'd stop.
Yeah, probably.
I know I would. Yeah. I watched back like a couple of webinars that I did and I'm like, oh my God, why do I do that with my mouth? Why am I doing that with my hands? Why am I doing that with my face? I should never show myself again. I'm like, okay, so I know not to watch.
Yes.
Yeah.
But do you know, Tina Harris said something really interesting to me because she's like big on YouTube and all of this
stuff.
And she was saying to me, the thing I suggest to people if they're really scared of showing up online, she said, you create a private Facebook group that only you have access to.
Oh, and practice.
And she's like, can you go live every single day for like 3 weeks or a month? And she's
like,
and then eventually nobody else sees it but you, but then you get used to it. I was like,
yeah, that's a great idea.
What a cool idea.
Yeah.
Actually.
I did that. I have a private Instagram account.
Oh, do you?
Where I, when they bring out new features and different things, because the first time I did an Instagram live, this may bring some comfort to people. The first time I did an Instagram live when the day they brought it out, I couldn't figure out how to turn it off. So it was going and then people are all watching and they're like, this is amazing. You're trying this new thing. And I'm like, How do we end this? Yeah. And then I'm looking around the screen and it took me a good 30 seconds to figure out how to turn it off.
Well, you have to keep that
now I have a private one to try.
That's a good plan. I think I need one of those
as well. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So that is the two is we have the marketing, we have the money, and then we have the merit. I do think that the third thing that is probably key to getting that seven-figure business is actually knowing what you're talking about and loving your product.
Yes.
There is a lot of people online that can market really, really well, but they may not have the credibility and the program that is solid, which means you don't get that word of mouth and that repetition.
Yeah.
And online business is the same as any business. Like your reputation is everything.
Yeah.
So I think that's an important part too.
And if there's nothing behind that, because there are some people that we know that are amazing. They look amazing when you see the videos on like LinkedIn or Instagram.
Yeah.
Behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much.
Yeah. You need people to come again, tell all their friends and keep it growing. And that's how it's going to bring you not only that seven figures, but the success that will last as long as you want it to.
Yeah. So a lot of people, you are known as like the woman to talk about for digital courses.
No, I hope so.
Yeah, you are. And I think I even see, so we're both big super fans of Kajabi.
Yes.
We always talk to our members about Kajabi and you're a big super fan of Kajabi.
Yeah.
And I notice even as well in the Facebook group that we have in Kajabi, people be like, oh, I want to learn how to do a digital course. And your name gets brought up
a lot of times. Isn't that so lovely?
It's so cool,
right? I just think
there's
nothing lovelier. When I see it, I'm like, love heart. Yes, it is lovely.
But it is like, it's a great revenue stream. And I think you talk to business owners and they're like, oh, I think I'd like to make a digital course. Mm. But a lot of times people don't know how. And you were saying, you know, marketing is one of those things.
Yeah.
But then also as well, the question is, how do I target people? Like,
we were
speaking about, do we do something like, do I focus just on my market? Maybe do I go really niche and focus on a specific language?
Yeah.
Or do I go big and try and get everybody?
Okay, I love this question.
Yeah.
Because the internet is, well, it's not infinite. There's a certain amount of people in the world. But when you actually do the numbers, so depends on what people want. So some people super happy. If I could make 100,000 a year, I would be so stoked with that.
Yeah.
Some people are like, I want to make the seven figure business. That's what I want. Some people are like, I want an eight figure business. Like whatever it is, there is enough fish in the sea.
Yes.
And so once you do the numbers on that, for me, I was going with my $1 million business that I wanted to have. Well, that was the thing that in my head, I was like, I want to have the seven figure business. When I get there, I will figure out where I want to go from there. You actually don't need that many people to get there. And so you can try and go really, really wide to try and get as many people as possible. But often when you go a niche, like say you want to make a video course in Portuguese, very niche, very, very siloed. Anyone who's looking for a video course in Portuguese, they're not going anywhere else. They're going, this is perfect for me.
Right, because I bet there's no video courses in Portuguese.
Yeah. So it's once you kind of identify that target market and that niche, you will usually do better with something like that than video course for everyone.
Yeah. Well, and that's so true that there's, I'm in one mastermind and it's very international and we've got women from lots of different countries.
Yeah.
And the women who are making killer amounts of money are big players in a very small market.
Yeah.
So for example, there's another...
Because you can be the best at what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a number of women who are doing programs in German and Turkish.
Yeah.
Making millions of dollars a year.
Yeah.
Doing one course.
Yeah.
in German and Turkish.
Yeah.
Because they are known for like the ones who do this one thing. And I'm like,
and I think
cool
when you do
that?
The numbers and work out how many you need, that's really viable. The other benefit that having your lane gives you is you can collaborate really well with other people. So what I found was when I started and was like, I will help anyone with a business to turn it into online, no other course creator wanted to play with me because they were going, you're going to try and poach my clients and you're going to take these. Now that I am very defined in I will help this, I can bring in really great guest experts that don't feel threatened. I can go into other people's programs that don't feel threatened because they're like, you know what? Tina's lane is here. My lane is here. It's all very defined and it's fine.
But it takes your time to figure that out.
It does. Yeah.
Because I've been reflecting on where I've gone even with Female Fusion that it takes time to work out what you're doing and who you're serving.
Yeah. And what you want too. Yeah. Like our goals change to different things. Mine has massively in the last couple of years, like massively.
It's so fascinating how that happens, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, I've seen you as well, because we've known each other for a couple of years now. And you know,
you were my last one in on the original deal. Yeah.
2 years in, baby.
Yeah.
But that has, like, when I look at like where I've gone and the vision that I had, because I remember
you've gone amazing. Like your trajectory of growth and what you have done is insane.
Yeah. I'm a bit tired.
I can imagine.
But I do crazy things like 15 podcast interviews in a day.
Yes.
But it works.
Yeah.
But it is like all the things. So the thing that I love about you is that you've got such a strategic mind like me as well, where it's like, where are the strategies? How do we put this into place? But I like as well that you talk about all of the other things that people necessarily wouldn't think about that will help you scale your business.
Yeah, that's good. Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks.
Just credit me for that your like USP.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I've gone through and I know you've gone through as well is team.
Yes.
And I don't even think it's unique to people who have digital businesses.
Oh gosh, no. It's the reason I sold my last company. We had 120 staff and I thought I might die. I could not do it anymore.
That gives me the sweats.
Yeah.
But that I think is the biggest barrier to growth.
Yes. And it's not such a bad thing either. Like it's a conscious decision. When I started this business, I had an assistant that was 10 hours a week to start with.
Yeah.
And I was like, we could run $1 million business with the two of us. Like that was going really nicely.
And it would be so profitable as well,
so
right?
So profitable, so easy. And so it has to be a really conscious decision of how big do you want to go? Because there's always a cost to pay to that. And then you're going from, solopreneurship into running a small business. And then you start, once you get over 10 people, you're then getting company layers in there and then you're getting real serious. And that takes a whole different skill set that for most of us entrepreneurs that are used to that creation and that nimbleness, it's not the skill set that comes naturally. No. And so we have to decide, do we want to train ourselves to do that and to be that way? Or do we bring in someone that can run the company like that? Like I really love Gino Wickman's Traction, the EOS system and the Rocket Fuel Visionary integrator kind of style. So that's what we're going through at the moment, because like you, like we've had to do both parts of the business. So I've been visionary and integrator at the same time.
And it's not sustainable.
Well, I mean, it's sustainable to a point. It's not sustainable if you want to grow bigger.
Yeah. I think the limit is $1 million.
Yeah.
Like $1 million at that point.
Yeah.
To grow any further, you really need
help.
It's the systems, but the systems will only take you so far.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, completely, completely. I mean, even I was looking at our inbox, I've just had 5 days off. And so there was a few things left that the team didn't know how to answer that I went through. And I was looking at them and going, first thing, how can I systemize this so this doesn't happen again? And I was looking at it going, there's just not a system for these. Like they're really nuanced kind of human things.
Yeah.
That humans need to then be empowered. So then I had to go back to the team and go, all right, if you could answer that, what do you think? Like, what would you want to say? how would you say it? And so that I could get them to go, you know what you just said is the exact thing that I would do. Like, you've got it. You can do it.
It's just giving them the confidence.
Yeah. And that's where systems and automation doesn't work. You do need humans to serve humans.
And I think as well, we need, even if you have like an integrator or a head of operations or whatever that position is called, that you still need to spend the time with the team.
Yeah.
And you still need to kind of share with them what the vision is and where the business is going. So they come along with that.
Yes. I think that's a big part of it is them. Well, for me, I say, like, you've got to have a care factor of it. If you don't care about, I want no one in my orbit that just goes to work for a paycheck. And I've taken people that are less qualified that really love what we're doing and the mission and the values and the vision and the people that we work with. And they're the best ones always because they care about the people.
Yeah.
And even though we're running a digital online business, we're running a people business.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we find that as well. Like, we have a
digital membership. Yeah, you're serving people as well.
But it is so people focused. And one of the things, because we have so many members in Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah.
And then also a lot in Europe and North America.
Yeah.
So we've just taken the decision that we're hiring a community manager in the UK.
Yeah.
Because then we'll have, between Australia to North America, we'll kind of have it covered.
Yeah.
And then there's not demands on people who are in the middle having to wake up early or stay up late to go and deal with stuff.
Yeah. But there's also the boundary in there in going. So we've looked at different things on how much should we staff around the clock and what should we be doing, and come to the decision that actually people can wait.
Yes.
Sometimes. Yeah. Like, there was a point, we have a much smaller membership than you do. We have 230 members. And there's a point that if someone didn't get a response within an hour or two, they were like, hang on, I've asked my question. Has anyone seen my question? And I was going, okay, that's my fault. How have I set that expectation that you can ask any question at any time and jump? Like, that was never part of the deal, but we let that come in. And I do think that for anyone, not necessarily in courses, but anyone running a membership, that it is one of the things that seep in and you don't even notice it until it's there and you're like, oh no, what did I do? How do I wind that back?
Yeah. But, you know, and we did that in the beginning because there is the thing in the beginning that you are like so desperate to please because you're like, what, you like me and you want to be in my membership?
But also you want to help.
Of course.
Like, I now have very strict boundaries because I know how slippery the slope can get, and it's very hard. So we've got our Empress Circle Mastermind, which I answer every question that comes into this as soon as it comes in. But then our bigger group, our Empire Builder group, I'm not the one that answers the questions in there. The team does. Yeah. And I will go through it sometimes and go, yeah, I just want it. And then I'll get on voicemail and go, okay, say this to this person, say this to this person.
I do the same thing as well because I realize that if I'm in there answering stuff.
You get tagged a million times and then you're on the hook. Yeah. Or if you're unavailable, then you disappoint people because they got used to you having you there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that is working with the team. Like, one of the rules I have with the team is nobody's post goes unanswered.
Yes.
It needs to, within half a day, it has to be answered. So ideally, I'm hoping that somebody else in the community will answer it because this is the thing that I say to people. And it's the same in Empire Builder, right? Like, all the answers that you need are going to come from people there.
Yeah.
And I may not give you the best answer, that you might get better feedback from other people.
Yeah.
Ask them.
Yeah. And I do think that's true sometimes. Like, I have to remind myself the fear of starting often because I will see people that are going through their first launches and putting themselves out there for the first time. And I'm like, just do the thing. Like, you want the thing? Do the thing. Come on, let's go. And I have to remind myself how scary it is.
Yeah.
And that I've got so many runs on the board that you've got to put yourself back into that state, that I do think that sometimes it's really helpful for the member who's just done it.
Yeah.
To go, I just did this last quarter and this was my result. Like, they have a better perspective to be able to pull that person up under them. And that's my favorite thing about it.
Yeah. Cause it is like that. That I think is when you do have a membership that the community, like, a lot of times you can have all of this great stuff.
Yeah.
But it's the people who are in it, and that's what makes you stay, right?
Yeah, it's both. I mean, it's both. I think if our content was crap, people would find something else. Yeah. But people definitely stay for the community. Yeah. Like they come for the content. They come for what is sold on the sales page and what they think they want. But then they realize everything that you can't articulate on there, and that movement of people that are all going for the same goal and all going, I mean, I know for a lot of the women that are in our programs, it's probably similar for Female Fusion too. Like there's not many circles. There could be, and I know I was the oddball in our friendship circles. Like I would, when my kids were young, go to sports and I was the odd one out. Like there were no mums that were like me in our local area. They'd go, what did you do this week on a Friday? And I'd be like, I did this and I did that and we did that and we flew here and we did that. And they would kind of look at me like, you're a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
You're crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I go into these business circles where I'm like, oh, my crazy is your crazy.
Yes.
Our crazy is the same crazy.
But that's... Oh, when you're building a business, it is so important.
Yes. And
what I love is that I've seen so many people build like incredible friendships from that as well.
Yes. I have members, like we just had 5 members go away and like they had a house for a weekend.
Oh, yeah, I saw
and
that.
All did planning and dreaming together. And I'm like, this is awesome. I'm like, there's a little part of me that was like, I did that. You're welcome.
But that's cool, right?
Like, yes.
Yeah. And sometimes I think people feel kind of jealous about that, like they're worried that maybe they're gonna go and start their own thing, and I'm like like have at it.
I have a magic that can't be replicated, Jen.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And the same thing as well that I feel like with Female Fusion, that go do your thing.
Yes.
Because we can't be everywhere.
Yeah.
Connect.
We
with
have
each
so
other.
Many offshoots. I love it. We've got like book clubs going on.
A book club?
Yeah, there's someone started a book club and they're reading a business book every month and then catching up to talk about it.
That's cool.
There's there's different pods on different things. Like there's a whole lot of stuff that I see and go, awesome.
Good.
Yeah.
Keep me out of it. I got enough.
Yeah.
And how do you, because we had this interesting conversation and a lot of business owners, like even in Female Fusion, we have our 7- and 8-figure business owners get together. Yeah. And a lot of times the conversations that happen around that, like I'm tired. Mm. I'm tired. I'm working hard, taking yourself more out of the business. Mm-hmm. And I know that you've done a lot of work on that. Like I kind of look at you in awe and go, can I be like Tina now and just always be on holiday?
I am not always on holiday.
But I'm making it sound like you don't do any work because you work hard.
Yeah.
But then you're able to kind of step away and shut off.
Yeah. I probably across the year end up having 12 to 14 weeks semi off.
But that's good.
And I have 6 weeks completely off.
Okay.
Yeah, I do like the balance of that. But when I'm on, I'm on. Like I will, you know, you're no stranger to this.
No, I'm not.
Do my travel things and run a conference and then go into another thing and then another thing and then meetings here and then events here and jam it all together. And then, you know, I go in sprints. I'm not a marathon of a business owner. I like to go all in, batch it all together, and then I hibernate and I literally disappear. And I recharge and I love that we can do that with this sort of business.
But you need that for your brain.
Totally. Right? Like, yeah, totally. And there was, I think I've fought my natural inclination for a really long time by just forcing myself to do the things even when I'm tired. And I have no interest in that anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that shows that as you grow and mature as a business, because in the first couple of years, and I recognize that even though I've had businesses for over 20 plus years, that it's still new. You know, you have to put in all of the work all
you
over
do.
Again.
Yeah. And it was a certain amount.
So I've had a really great coach for the last 12 months that I have been talking to about how much is enough and what are we actually working towards and do we want to build and sell or do we not? And avoiding the burnout that I have come into recently. And so my MO has always been sprint as hard and fast as you can.
Yeah.
Go hard, sell, exit, and then go to the next. And I don't want to do that anymore. So a part of me was going, well, what does it look like if I create something that I never get tired of, that I never want to escape from, that is actually can go over and over again? And that's why I built in the time off, which I've never done previously because I never wanted to say no to an opportunity. Someone had asked me to speak somewhere. Yes. On the podcast, yes. Present, yes. Any opportunity that could grow the business, yes. Now I will say, I say no to so many things.
Isn't that a nice feeling though, to say no?
Well, sometimes I think it's a cruel fact of the universe that when you want it so bad, there's nothing there. It's so hard. And then you get there and you're like, okay, I have enough now. Boom, it all comes flowing in. And I'm like, where were all these opportunities when I was desperate and broke?
Yeah.
They would have been great then.
But now I'm trying to be more sustainable. So I am nearly 40 in like a couple of weeks.
And there is nothing more. If I built and sold this business, there is nothing more that I would want to do that I would love more than what I'm doing now. At some point in my life, I do want to be a romance novelist. So I still have that career up my sleeve. But for the unforeseeable future, there's no other business that I would want to build myself. So I'm like, why would I?
Why would you sell it?
Why would I break it?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to have it sustainable. So I want to have it at a level where I know my members. I want to get to 1,000 members. That's it. No more. Because at that stage, I know what team that will take. And I know how I can manage that. And I don't want any bigger. And previously, I would have seen that as an epic fail. And go, what? You can't hack it? You don't want bigger? Like, what's wrong with you? You've got all this there. You've got to milk it. You've got to maximize its potential. Whereas now, I'm like, I actually just want to live a really good life.
Yeah.
And do good work with good people.
Well, that's what life is about, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
Sometimes we forget.
I know we forget.
Yes.
Something that you have to remind yourself.
Totally. Right.
I had those little conversations with myself as well.
Yes,
it is. Because you want to go big. Like, I'm like, go big or go home.
Yeah, and it is very tempting. But I mean, I'm part of a wonderful mastermind, and I'm the babyest business in there. And it is really nice sometimes when I get that. You sometimes think the grass is greener. Like, you'll see someone else's business and go, oh, now that looks good. I might have that one. And then you see, like, everything has its own set of problems. I remember looking at one of Warren Buffett's books. I can't remember which one, but he was talking about choose your set of problems. Everything that you're dealing with has your own set of problems. So you've got to consciously choose them when you get to a certain level. What do you want to solve? And you'll be rewarded for that. And I look at theirs and I go, I could build a $10 million business if I want to. I know I could do that, but at what cost?
Yeah.
And I used to think if anyone said that, well, no, you can't, because if you could, you would. But now I know it's not all it's cracked up to be.
Yeah, it's not like that. It isn't all it's cracked up to be at all.
Yeah. And so I think for some people that is perfect because they love that life. And they love managing people and they love that part of it. Whereas I love the work. I love the creation of the things. I love, you know, every woman deserves to have this simple system to be able to do the thing that they want to do that they're finding hard. And that's simply all I want to do is create that.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you, the way that you operate your membership for women who want to create courses, you open your membership a couple times a year.
Yeah, only twice a year, in April and September, October.
Bring it finished.
Ish. And it's somewhere I just can't remember where.
The great thing about having your own business.
Yeah.
You'll get there.
Yeah.
So if people want to join, the best way is just to go up to your website.
Yeah, if you go to herempirebuilder.com, there is a whole lot of free stuff there. I would get anyone to start with that. We've got free guides on tech to use. We've got free guides on how to start your online course, free guides to launching. There's free guides to everything so you can have a little taster. And then from there, there's short courses. And then if you're really ready to take it seriously, then there's Her Empire Builder, which is the humdinger and has everything.
Amazing.
I've got to watch the slang when I say humdinger. I go, there's a lot of people around the world that will go, what did she just say?
Yeah.
Yeah. Apologies for global people with my slang.
All the things. It's everything.
It's all the things.
Amazing. Well, Tina, thank you so much,
Jen.
Thank you. Thanks for joining me for this week's episode of the podcast. Now, if you are thinking that maybe your personal brand could be a little bit shinier, I've put together just the resources for you. Female Fusion's personal branding toolkit goes into everything that you need to secure speaking opportunities on podcasts, speaking opportunities at events or conferences, and to be able to nail the very best personal branding photographs. It's all together in one handy pack with mini trainings and Canva templates. I've included the link in the show notes, and all you need to do is hop over there and grab it.